Hello and welcome to the Product Biz Podcast. This is episode number 84 and I'm your host, Monica Little. And this is our very last episode of 2023. So I'm super excited that you are here with me. I'm super excited to introduce you to Stacy, who is our guest expert today. But really, before we dive into what to expect today, I just want to mention that this is our last episode for 2023. We are changing things up for 2024. This is going to be our last guest episode probably for a while. So my goal in 2024 is to bring back more solo episodes, bring back more mindset episodes, bring back more of the things that are actually holding you back. So a little bit of a sneak peek to season two of the Product Biz Podcast, which will be launching in January. So just wanted to let you in on that really quick. But now let's talk about what's going on in today's episode. So today we are talking about taking the stress out of finances with Stacy Millard. Now, one of the biggest mistakes that small business owners make is selling their products without ever looking at their numbers to know if they're actually making a profit, including all of the expenses in their business, in order to keep their business afloat. Now, most small business owners take a guess at what their product pricing should be. And before you know it, they're struggling to pay the bills. They're struggling to pay their business credit card. They're struggling to buy more raw materials. They're struggling to even think about hiring help, even though they are so busy in their business and they can't handle everything. And it all stems from this one sneaky issue, which is your product pricing. If your products are priced right, you can buy more raw materials, you can hire help, you can invest back in your business, you can cover your expenses. And today's episode, Stacy Millard shares how to use numbers to grow your business and how to take the stress out of finances so you're truly making money and making an impact and growing your business for the long run. This is a really great episode, and I actually learned a lot from Stacy that I turned what I learned from this conversation with her, and I updated some of the pricing content inside Product Biz Academy. So that's how good of a conversation this is. She'll get you looking at things differently and just assessing the profitability and the pricing and the numbers in your business. So if you're like, oh my gosh, numbers and pricing, this is overwhelming, this is boring, cool, it may be, but this is also critical to your business to make sure you're actually making money. And your business is only a business if it's making money. So this is an episode, and Stacy actually makes it fun and enjoyable and interesting to listen to. So don't jump the gun just yet. Now, Stacy is a mom of two and a multi-passionate entrepreneur. She grew and sold her first seven-figure business before she was 35 while raising her daughters. She believes in three non-negotiables for every successful business: making money, heart-led impact on those we serve, and having a great life because of our businesses and not in spite of it. Stacy works as a fractional CFO and business mentor for entrepreneurs, helping them scale and have the success she knows we can all achieve. So let's bring her on to the show and hear what Stacy has to say about taking the stress out of finances. Welcome, Stacy, to the Product Biz Podcast. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to chat.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat about money, about finances, all the things that you're an expert in, and it's just going to be a great conversation, and I just am excited to pick your brain and learn from you. So before we dive into this topic, I would love for you just to introduce yourself, let us know your background, what got you here, how you work with people, how you help people. Tell us the whole show.
Yeah, you bet. I grew into entrepreneurship very much by a fluke. I have the same story that a lot of us have of we just wanted to do something better, offer people something better. We saw a problem and we wanted a solution. For me, that was actually a service-based business. I was an accountant. I've worked with people from, you know, all walks of life, all sizes of businesses for the past 17 years. It kind of dates myself. But going in through accounting and seeing the impact small business owners made and how they impact their community and their reach and how they get to choose things for their business, what they're passionate about, they get to show their values through their work, really attracted me. I ended up starting my own business and sold it because my values evolved over that time. But it's just been such a journey, and I've just felt totally head over heels in love with helping people increase their income and their impact. Like, how do you make money while still having that heart-led aspect of your business? So that is what I do now. And I also own a product-based business. So I have a special place in my heart for that.
Yeah. And tell us about your product-based business.
Yeah. So it's called Love Powered Co. We have affirmation cards and mindfulness products for families. It's actually a business that I purchased after having the people who used to own it, these two wonderful ladies. I got to experience the impact that they had on our lives through their products. And eventually my family and I decided when the business came for sale that we wanted to continue that and extend it and, you know, make it our own. So
I love
that's
it.
What we do.
Yeah. So you have such a unique perspective because you were a CPA and then you started your own business and then you sold your own business. And now you have another business that you run plus a product business that you run. So you really are just like the guru of all gurus that has a ton of great information to share with us across running businesses. And I'm excited to talk specifically about finances because I think I have a very, very high level view of just finances and numbers and using that really to grow your business. So I would love to hear from you specifically when we talk about how to use numbers to grow your business. What are some of those main numbers that every single product-based business owner should know? How often should they be reviewing these numbers? Why is it important? Let's start at like the very top and hear what you have to say about that.
For sure. So I can definitely give you some numbers. I'd also, before I do that, I think what's more important than specific numbers is understanding the relationship. So if you understand how profit is generated, you almost see the levers and it's almost like, okay, we're going to put this one up a little bit and this one down a little bit. And every decision that you make moves a lever. Does that make sense? Like there's always a chain reaction. So that is where I love to start with people of like the equation of profit. And I would love to like just remove the stigma of making money in business because a lot of us have like such hearts in it and we want to do well for people. But profit is what we have to generate to stay in business, to continue to grow that impact, to bring on the next product or the next, you know, next thing we're going to do, to give back to the community. We have to have money to do that. So we talk about profit. And then to break it down, we have revenue, cost of sales, and overhead. And then the rest is profit. So I almost, for me, I loved puzzles growing up. So I'm like, okay, well, if this one's here, then what does this one look like? And that's where we talk about like, what do we sell something for? How much did it cost us to make it? You know, what do we do within our business? Are we paying for marketing? Are we paying ourselves? All those types of things. And then how do we result in some profit in the end? And ideally some cash flow, right? We want cash in our pockets to do the next thing with. So understanding that relationship is most important. And then from knowing that, there's a couple key numbers. So one, your profitability. What are you making at the end of the day? More importantly, also understanding like what's your break even? What are your overhead expenses every month that no matter how much you sell, you're going to have those. So now you can set a sales target of, I have to, on average, have this many dollars of sales. When you know that number, you start making decisions differently in your business. You might decide to have work from home instead of having a storefront, or you make different marketing decisions, but you're always looking at, okay, is this doable? How far off does this feel once you've set those targets? And then of course, for product-based businesses, it's incredibly important to know your margins. How much do I make on things? When you know those couple numbers, you can start answering other questions. Like I work with clients on when they're like, okay, well, which sales channel should I be on? Like, should I be on Etsy? Should I not? What does that look like? And I'm like, well, this is how much we have to be doing in volume to make this worth it. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're asking me other questions. Like I had a discussion on Fair the other day, which was a whole different ballpark, right? Of like, oh, this maybe doesn't work for this particular business. And being able to make those decisions because you know things like your margin, being on places like Amazon because you know your ad spend, and being able to say like, okay, these are going to be worth it based on what I know I have to do to be visible on these platforms. So you get to make other decisions based on knowing those.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay. I want to dive into overhead because I love what you said of knowing your overhead every month. So then you know how much you need to sell to break even. So two questions I want to ask you. What is actually part of overhead? Because I think maybe some people may not know what's encompassing an overhead. And second question is, how do you balance this out when your overhead changes month by month? Do you take like an annual view and divide it by 12 and that's your target? Or do you look at literally what are the expenses coming up this month in terms of my overhead? Because obviously I think, and when you define overhead, we'll figure out the answer to this, but I think there's things like your website hosting platform, maybe that's overhead and things like that. So let's start with what is overhead, what goes into that, and then we'll dive into that second question too.
Yeah, absolutely. So the way that I see overhead and the way I can best describe it is those expenses that happen no matter what, whether you've made a dollar of sale or not. So they are things like advertising, right? You're going to spend on advertising, but you may or may not make a sale from it. There are things like insurance, all of the different softwares, you're paying for them no matter what. There are also things like your internet connection and your cell phone and some of those more basic things. If you have an actual storefront, rent's included in there. Maybe you're paying for a warehouse and a warehouse team that just like you have these monthly fees to have your stock on their shelves kind of thing. So all those things that happen no matter what, every single month, whether you've sold a dollar or not. And then the other thing I'd say is like, yes, like sometimes we pay these fees and they're paid annually. And then so you're fluctuating month to month. The way that I do it is I look at like, well, what would it look like over 12 months? And then I divide it by 12, right? So like, beautiful. What would a full year look like? Let's break it down into 12.
Got it. I love it. So for the person listening who maybe hasn't done this before, it's looking at, okay, obviously all this information should have been submitted during tax season of everything that you spent money on. So you can go back and find those things that Stacey just said, like insurance, softwares, including your website, hosting fees like Shopify or Squarespace, rent for a space, internet, cell phone, and then seeing what is that on an annual basis divided by 12 and know that that is what I need to make at least to break even just from that. Right.
So we also have to take it a step further. So that's our overhead monthly. So those are our expenses. And you can look at it and be like, oh, has anything changed? Right. If you're going to use last year's numbers, just look, has anything changed? Did I get rid of a bunch of software I don't need? Things like that. But the next step behind it is if your overhead, let's say, is $1,000 a month, like you need to sell more than $1,000 a month to break even because you have your margin, right? So now we need to know what is your gross margin. The way I like to look at margin, so I'll explain what that is it takes into account your cost of sales. So those are all the other expenses, the ones that fluctuate. So your cost of your physical product, but also like your shipping fees. If you're ad spend is one of your overhead costs, but maybe you have like an Amazon fee per order, right? Like depending on what that looks like, all those things that fluctuate, your processing fees, your credit card fees, those all get lumped into cost of sales. So you find your gross margin by taking your sales less your cost of sales, and you get to look at what's left over. Usually we express it as a percentage of sales. So we see like, oh, I make, you know, 50% on my sale. I sell the t-shirt for $50, it cost me $25 and I have $25 left over. My margin's 50%. So what you need to do to figure out your break even is take a look at, okay, here's my overhead. Here's what I'm spending every month. But each time I make a sale, I really only make about 50% of that. I get to keep 50% because I paid for the t-shirts, right? So now you're looking at, well, if my overhead is $1,000 and off of every dollar of sale, I only really get to keep half of that. Now I need to sell $2,000 a month. So that's where you're setting your break even target of like, okay, I know this. And of course your sales are going to fluctuate. Some months are going to be better than others, but this is really important to know. The other thing I think that people miss, so like I've heard people talk about break even before, but one of the other things people miss is if you're just breaking even on every sale, you're not left with any money to then reinvest in more inventory. So this is okay if you're running a print on demand business and you don't need to stock inventory, but it is a problem when you need to reinvest in your next product. You need supplies or you need to order something. So you actually then need to be looking ahead to say like, how am I generating cash flow so that I can then purchase the product that I need to continue to put on my shelves.
Yeah. Oh, I love that explanation. I think that really showcases that the pricing of your products has to be pretty dang spot on in terms of having enough margin to overcompensate all these expenses that we have. Now, how I teach my members to price their products is how you said cost of sales. So the cost of all of your products. And then an equation that I tell them to do is then multiply that times two, and that's your wholesale price, and then multiply that times two to get your actual retail price. So essentially every product that you sell on your website, you should have about like a 75% margin that you're making on it to give some of that buffer. Talk me through from your point of view, is there like a gross margin percent that people should be aiming for specifically with a product business I know it's probably like super specific on the type of product business. And obviously it depends on the type of overhead, how much overhead, but are there any general rules of thumb there on how much margin is a good cushion for all these expenses that we do have?
Well, I think this is a really interesting conversation because first of all, I love your percentages. I'm like, in an ideal world, that is absolutely what everybody is charging. Yeah. But there are two different ways really that business is done. One is a higher value, higher ticket item where you are making 75% on it. And that's fantastic. Or business to consumer, you're making 75%. And the world is great. But there's also this world where we make a lot less, but we're doing a lot higher volume. And you have to kind of understand like, okay, well, where do I fit into that? You need, if you're going to do high volume, like you need the audience to do it. Right? You can't mm-hmm. be spending a ton on ads because you don't have the margin there to like do this, but you need a lot of eyes. So that might work well for a business where you already have a foundation built, or like maybe you're using a licensing agreement and you just, because of that, you have a lot of eyes. So first of all, I think you need to like identify what your strategy is. The other thing I would say about that is, a lot of times that's really the 75% is hard depending on the business to hit for somebody who's new. Right? Mm-hmm. Like when you're doing an MOQ of like, you know, a couple hundred or a couple thousand units, depending on what you're ordering, your manufacturers or your suppliers are like, are you kidding me? Like, oh, this is like peanuts for us, right? In the terms of the volume that they do. So you're not getting the best pricing. And so that is maybe hard to hit. But then at least my number one thing in business is like, if you're never where you want to be, if you're not at that margin you want to be at, or like I also talk about this when people aren't paying themselves, I'm like, if you're not there, I want you to make a plan to get there. What does it look like to get there? So you're not just saying like, okay, I hope to increase the volume that I sell so that I can have a, you know, better price on this. It's like, no, actually, what are the steps we can take to get to a 75% profit margin? Because sometimes the market dictates, like I have a client right now who's not at that. They're at about 50%. And they could not charge a penny more for what they offer because there's so many other options out there. And people's appetite is just not, like consumers' appetite is not to pay more for it. So they have to approach it a little differently than just like, oh, we'll raise the price on this, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's unique for each business, but you create the plan and say like, well, what can I charge? What do I want to make for a margin? And then how do I fill in all those in-between pieces?
Yeah. And it's really just this dance. I think it's a dance of your pricing mm-hmm. and understanding your finances and understanding your expenses. But then what you alluded to too is also, well, how are you doing the marketing and selling to actually get the sales, to actually have those come in? And what's your strategy? What's your plan to get in front of more people, to grow your audience, to be on the platforms, whatever that they may be? Because either way, if you have one without the other, no matter what direction it is, it's probably not going to work, right? If you have your finances in check and your pricing is right, but you don't have an audience, well, you're not selling to anyone. Versus if you have a great mm-hmm. audience, but your finances aren't in check and you're barely breaking even or you're in the red, well, that's not going to be good for your business either. So do you find it mm-hmm. as like those two are the main pillars, or is there anything else that comes up? Is it like finances and marketing? If we were to simplify what makes sense to grow a business?
Yeah, for sure. So I think in a small business, especially for somebody who's scaling, it is very much a dance of cash flow and marketing. Mm-hmm. Managing a cash flow in terms of like, well, what can I invest in? Like every new product you develop is, you know, is costly. There's a cost to it. You have to develop it. You got to get the samples. Like you got to get it to people, thinking about how much it's going to cost to ship to people. Like you're doing that dance also with, if I don't release a new product, I'm going to lose people. Like they're not going to want to just buy this one thing for the rest of their lives. So it's always this dance. If you're investing in marketing, it's always like, well, what is the spend on it? I would also argue like people often think like, oh, I can just do this. But every time that you are doing something, that should cost the business money. And you think of it differently when you're like, oh, what would I have to pay myself to be on TikTok 17 hours a day? Mm-hmm. Because as you scale, somebody's going to have to take that over for you to keep it up. Right? Mm-hmm. So you start making different decisions too when you're valuing your time of like, okay, which platform might be the best? One of the things that I would love to talk about is how small businesses differentiate. So I saw this article earlier this year on high-end brands and talking about like what do we think's next from them? And it was talking about people really want to be a part of a movement. And I think that small business owners undervalue this, and it's costing them more in their marketing and then also reducing their cash flow because they're not bringing enough of like, what do people want from me? So like, if we can't increase our price and we don't have money to spend on maybe advertising, we're like, well, what are we going to do here? Then the answer really is community. Like, people are constantly looking for community. So I cannot, like, I come from the financial world, but I cannot stress enough how your product aligns with somebody's lifestyle and how you use every opportunity to like interact with them and bring them into your community and make them feel a part of something absolutely hits the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I think that's so important too. And when we talk about community, what does that mean on a more tactical level? Does that mean finding your people on whatever platform they exist, if it's in person, if it's on Instagram, if it's on TikTok, and really just creating that two-way type of conversation? Is that what you mean, and how we actually bring that to life?
Have you ever seen a brand that you're like, all of a sudden you want to look up their founder and you're like, oh, who are they? And you want to see their social media posts. You're like, what's next from them? Like, I want to be a part of this. And you love what they're doing. And if your friend asked you, you're always like, oh, let me offer up their name. Or if somebody said something bad about them, you're like, no, no, no. Like, let me tell you about this brand. Have you ever felt commitment like that to a brand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's what I'm talking about. So I think people can create this differently, but sometimes it is about creating a community of people. Sometimes it's about how you market, the conversation, asking people to be a part of your world, but it's about creating a movement for what you believe in, mm-hmm. right? So getting people to be a part of that because they feel like they are a part of your business.
Yep. Beautiful.
So there's so many different ways I think that it can be done. And you have to find though, like what works for you and what's unique. And it's about your values, the product that you sell. You know, like if you're selling a kid's toy, like maybe it's about bringing moms together, making their life easier. Or maybe it's about like celebrating the outdoors. But like, if you can get people to start willingly posting your brand on social media because they love it so much and they think that they're a part of it, that I think would be the tipping point where like, oh, people feel like they're a part of this.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I love that. I agree 100%. And I love how you said that's where things are heading and where more emphasis is going to be placed. So people are hearing it first from you here on where to spend their time, which I love it. One thing that you mentioned that I want to dive into a little bit is how people may not be paying themselves. So can you just dive in more on that situation? What do you recommend for people who are investing all their money into their business? Do you recommend for those people to actually take a part out, like profit first and pay yourself? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So I think a lot of the time, first of all, like let's remove the stigma that when you are starting a business, there's a requirement for an injection of cash and an injection of energy, right? Like your first inventory purchase or creating your website, like all of it's either going to take time or money. And we expect to have to put that in. And even if you read Profit First or any of those other books on how you build a business and you make money from a business, there is going to be an amount of outlay that doesn't come back to you right away in the business. So we expect to invest something. But what I see the problem is that we don't predict and don't expect like, okay, when am I going to take a wage and how much am I going to take? And so it just becomes this like question mark and it sits there often for way longer than it should just because it hasn't been addressed. So what I would love to see people get to is paying themselves an equivalent of a market wage. And then when I say that, everyone's always like, but I do marketing and I do packaging and I do all these things. And then I'm the owner. And so how I look at it is like, okay, if you're going to wear a lot of hats, break it down into those roles and say, this is what I would pay this person for marketing. And this is what I would pay this person maybe for doing the admin stuff. And here's what I would probably pay somebody for this other role, and break it down that way and say like, okay, these hats that I'm wearing in my business, this is what this pay would be to somebody else if I had to hire this, all these roles out. So this creates a level of stability because if you ever did, like, let's say get sick, then you have the money, you've made it so that the business can afford to continue operating even without you. Okay. So like, mm-hmm. let's plan it that way. Then from there, if we know where we're setting our targets and we keep asking ourselves, like, even if I'm not paying myself, how can I get there? How can I make a little bit more? At least we're asking ourselves the right questions and taking the right steps. In terms of, do you take the pay or do you reinvest it? I have different opinions on it. Even like, okay, so should I take a wage or should I not? Though some of those questions are tax related, so they could be based on your own personal tax circumstances. But the other questions to me is really about like, what is your flavor? Like, do you have to get paid from your business? How do you think your investments are going to be paying off to you? And I love asking people that because I think sometimes we overemphasize our investments. We look at marketing like, guys, like I've read some sales pages on investments and I'm like, damn, like I'm in, like tell me all of this. But we don't really ask ourselves, like, do I have the capacity to carry this out? Or based on what I'm learning, do I have the capacity to like put in the time and the effort to learn the skill? Like, yes, they're going to teach me, but I'm going to have to develop it. I'm going to have to get better at it. So we're not looking at those reinvestments enough. The same thing with like a new product. Like if you're saying, okay, I'm going to forgo a wage and invest in a new product. Do you know that your community wants that? Mm-hmm. Does the audience want it from you? Because I would hate to see you forgo a wage and invest a whole bunch in a product that you can't sell. So really getting clear on what, if I'm going to forgo my wage, then is these steps that I'm going to say I'm going to take, are they really going to lead to the results that I'm hoping for? So that's more where I'm like, I'd rather see you take the money and invest it personally if you're not going to make good on that investment. And not to add that pressure, because I think we all make mistakes, but in terms of investments, even I look at like, how do you invest based on, is this all or nothing? Like, for example, social media, I have this conversation all the time of like, if you invest in social media and you're like, this has to turn around month one or even month two, it may not. So like you have to build up that audience. You have to put in the work. So, you know, maybe you don't, maybe you challenge yourself. How can I do this without investing the money? I like to invest in a way that if it doesn't work out, I still have money to try something else. Does that make sense? Like, I don't like to be all or nothing. So those are kind of the decisions that I'm making. And I know it doesn't like specifically say like, okay, here's when you pay yourself a wage at this dollar amount, but it can be very much a, how do I trust myself? How much am I into this for? And can I challenge myself to do this on less?
Yeah. And I think overall, what I took away from what you said too, is just looking at it full picture and seeing what's available and where your funds are going instead of just looking at everything separately. I think that's what a lot of people do. It's like, okay, well, this costs this amount of money and this costs this amount of money. But if you look at everything in totality, you get a little bit better of a picture of where you're going, what's capable. And one thing I wanted to dive into that you mentioned too was specifically about new products. Because one thing that I'm a pretty big stickler with some of my members who have already, when they first start working with me, maybe 10 to 15 products around that amount, that from my perspective are products that their customers love, but just need a little bit more nurturing to really share the value and promote it and get more sales for it. So I'm a big fan of like, let's not come out with new products just yet, because that takes up a lot of your cash. It takes up a lot of your time when you're having to add new products on all of the platforms that you sell, plus experimenting, et cetera, and getting new photos and getting them edited and all the things that come out with new products. Is there any financial way that you recommend to plan out like, hey, I'm starting a new product. Here's what I should look at from a financial perspective in terms of should I estimate how many units? Should I estimate the cost? Should I estimate how long it's going to take to cover that? What from a financial point of view do you recommend? Because I feel like that would help a lot of people to be like, oh, okay, well, it's not just this pie in the sky concept of it takes a lot of time and takes a lot of money. It's actually like putting some numbers to paper and understanding how much this new product can actually cost to bring it to life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one key here is I use this like process. It's called the vivid vision. And I always like to like really understand, like play a movie out in my head. So like if today I decided on a new product, I envision exactly all the things that are involved with getting that to market. So product development, the sampling process, and then selling. So how do all those play in? So then what I like to do from there is put numbers to it all. So, you know, what is it to be developed? What about all the samples? What about the back and forth? What about then, you know, once you have the product, put putting it on a shelf. It's going to cost every month to put it there. And then finally, like, you know, your margins. So when I calculate those costs, I also compare it to the payback time. So how many do I have to sell? For example, we were looking at developing some stickers, and I got a quote from a designer on like the cost for stickers. And I looked at, okay, what's the cost and what do I make on margin on these stickers? And just that alone, not even considering that I was going to have to warehouse them and then I'm going to have to ship them, I looked at it and I was like, I have to sell 2,000 units of stickers. And then you can look at it like, okay, based on your current sales, like how many customers do you have? How many orders do you have? Does this feel good to you? What percentage of your market is actually looking for stickers? Are they interested in that? And then when I were like, eh, this doesn't really fit for us, right? Like mm-hmm. these are a nice to have. There's somebody was like, oh, this would be such a cute idea, but not everybody was. So going back to asking your best customers, like, what would you like to see next from us? Like, what do you feel like is missing from, for example, like Love Powered, we're all about routine. So we're like, what's missing from your routine? What would add value to it? And having those conversations. And then you can be sure when you're going to develop a product that you've got the audience for it and you kind of match that investment into it. But I agree, mm-hmm. like a lot of the time we're looking at the next thing instead of like, how do we make use and make sure we've captured the right market share. Mm-hmm. And then the other way I look at it is always like, there's an 80-20, right? So when you feel like you've squeezed most of the juice from the fruit, you're like, okay, now it's time, right? But we want to make sure that we've hit that.
Yeah. What if in that conversation of, you know, buying the ingredients, raw materials, et cetera, I think what happens with a lot of product-based business owners when they're coming out with new products is that they go to Amazon and they buy a 10-pack of bottles and they can buy a really small amount of oil and they can create this serum or whatever that they're creating. And they're like, well, I don't have to sell 2,000 of them. I just need to sell X amount. How would you talk through that? Because from my perspective, it's still like there's still so much work just to sell maybe those 10 that you want to sell. So is it going back to what you said of just putting dollars towards your time to actually bring it to life, even if you may only be buying a quantity of 10 and you can do that relatively easily?
Yeah, I think, have you ever heard of the words like opportunity cost as well? Mm-hmm. So like, sure, you could spend your time on those 10 bottles, but what else are you missing in the process? So is there another product that you could bring out that people are asking you for that instead of 10 bottles, you're selling 1,000 bottles? So there's a lot at play there. Like, you have to get it on your website. Like, how do you do that? You have to market it. So you actually have to spend time talking about it. People aren't just, you know, like I use the words like an ice shack in the desert. Like, just because you put it up on your website doesn't necessarily mean it'll sell right away. You got to talk about it. You got to put it on your homepage. It's taking up real estate that could be selling another one of your products. So I think that you need to really make sure that it's aligned. And then I also look at the sustainability of it, right? Like, so if it takes off, what would your plan be from there? Like, how do you keep the orders going? You've heard the stories about like people going viral on TikTok and then they sell out, and like it was like the best and worst thing to happen to their business because they can't take advantage of it. So you having a plan in place for meeting the demand, I think, like if you're only planning on ever selling 10 of something, like I would argue that you'd have way better investment options if you looked a little deeper and challenged yourself a bit.
Yeah, I love that. Because I think that's what a lot of people crutch on. They're like, well, it's not going to cost me a lot of money to come out with this new product, and I'm just going to test it out and see. But I think one thing I took from you too is, well, do the financials as if it does take off, as if you do have to buy 500 or 1,000 and create it. Then how long is it going to take you to make the money on that 500 or 1,000? Because if you don't think you're going to sell 500 or 1,000, is it even worth it in the first place, right? So it's kind of like forcing you to look into those numbers. And if that seems unrealistic, then that's probably your sure tell sign that's probably not the best place to spend your time, right?
And like the other thing I love to talk about here is like, okay, so when you're planning that I have to sell 1,000 or 5,000 of them, and we're talking about time, remember, like especially for anybody who's a maker who's home making or hand making their products, your time hand making the products has to be included absolutely has to be included in the cost. So I think a lot of the times people are like, well, the bottle cost me this and the serum product cost me this and like, that's it. But what about like making the formula and mixing it and, you know, getting it packaged and even just like packing orders? Because if you don't look at that, you're not looking at the profit. And then so you're like, okay, cool, I'm going to start with 10. We'll just see how it goes. Then all of a sudden you're at this like 5,000 volume and you're shipping all these candles or all these serums and you're like, I'm not making a penny. I'm working for less than minimum wage because you didn't look at the full cost. You only looked at the physical pieces that went into it instead of your time. Right. Mm-hmm. So like there's almost this danger when you're like, oh, I'm just going to test it out, because we're not looking at like, well, what does it cost me to make 10, like spend my time? What if I had to pay an employee and it's not right. scalable? So it's like we almost even don't want to have that as a full-time product. What I would also though suggest is like maybe there's an option to bring in something seasonally. Right. If you're like, I just want to try this, like, what about something seasonally? Or what if it's like one time pre-order, something like that, where it's like, you maybe can find other ways of doing it, but do not forget to include the amount of time. Because if it goes well, I've seen this like soap makers, candle makers, I've worked with multiple of them that this has happened to, where they're like, it's going so well, but I'm like making no money and I want to hire somebody. I'm like, well, but if you pay somebody, you're making negative $2 a candle to get it shipped. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't a sustainable business, even though you have a large audience. So mm-hmm. we have to start looking at other ways of doing things.
Yeah. And there's one question I want to ask, but first I want to elaborate on how you said like the pre-order thing, because this is something I hear a lot too, of people are like, well, my friends said that they would want this, or someone at a market told me that they would want this. And I asked some people and they were all excited about this potential new product. And I always tell them, I'm like, have them pay for it, pre-order upfront, have them put their money where their mouth is. Because a lot of times customers and friends and family will want you to create these products, but then when you actually launch it and it comes out, it's like, oh, you said you wanted it, but now you didn't buy it. So you're doing all this work. So I love that you said like, yeah, have a pre-order option, have people actually put their money where their mouth is to show that, yes, I want this and I'm actually following through and I will pre-order because I'm so excited for this product that you can potentially come out with.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I learned this piece of marketing before as well, that you should always be asking people like, well, how much would you pay for it? Right. So like, especially your biggest raving customers, your family, your friends, like they're always going to be on board. They're there to support you. That's what their role is. So then they come to you and they're like, oh, we would love that. Yeah. Like whatever you would like, that would be so cool. But you have to ask yourself, like, is this one person or is this everybody? Is this the person, like the customer that I don't talk to often? And then from there asking them, like, what would you pay for that? Because as soon as you start asking them, you'll see the look on their face and be like, ooh, like, I don't know, $20. You're like, oh, well, it's going to cost a lot more than $20 to make, right? Like you can start feeling out those conversations, and those are so important.
I love that. I love that as a next follow-up question, how much would you pay for it? And then if it doesn't fit the bill, perfect.
What's the value?
Right. Mm-hmm. Love it. Okay. One question I want to go back to. You were talking about making sure you add in the time to make, pack, ship your products. So how does someone actually do that? Is it physically timing yourself as you make a big batch and then dividing it by how many units you make and then applying maybe a minimum wage, because that is a minimum wage type role? Talk me through how that's actually done.
Yeah, you labeled it. Like, it's super simple. Like, how much time does it take you? And think it through, right? Like, you receive your product in the mail, you got to unpackage it, you got to do all the process of making it, make sure you're like fully packaging it, time that up. And then we typically don't just make one. So if you're making more than one, then divide it by the number of hours. And I would use whatever wage is like a market wage. What would you be willing to pay somebody else to do that same role? So maybe it's not minimum wage because they're like, oh, we're a small business, we want quality. Maybe we're paying a little bit more than that. But like, I would be looking at that amount. What would I pay somebody? What would I be willing to pay?
Beautiful. Yeah. And I think one thing too, because when we're the business owners who may be wearing this hat now, it's not our CEO wage that we apply. It's like, what's the actual market wage of someone who would do this? Because I think when we're doing all the things, we're like, okay, but my time is really important. But it's also like, well, you could easily hire someone to do this for you, where your time would be better spent elsewhere.
Yeah. So how I look at it is, if I was an investor in this business, so like kind of removing myself from the equation, if I was an investor, who would I pay and how much would I want to pay? So I treat myself as like the investor, and then I treat myself as the employee. So even though you're like, well, I'm the, you know, I own this, like I want, you know, $50 or $100, whatever it is an hour. But like you would never, if you look at that business, you'd never pay somebody that amount. So if you're like, well, then how do I get there? Like I want a wage of $100 an hour. How do I get to that place? What you're doing is looking at growing the business enough that you're selling enough product that you take all the profit on the product, even after you've paid people the minimum wage to make it, and then you're making enough to add your $100 an hour wage to overhead. So that's the path to get there, where you're like not having to fill that role of the maker. You're not having to fill that employee role. You're just management, but the business has to get big enough to support that.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Okay. One final question before we kind of wrap things up. From either, you know, the cost of sale point of view or just expenses that small business owners have in general, do you see any big hidden things? So for example, or things that people are spending a lot of money on that maybe they shouldn't. And again, this is probably like super specific on each individual business, but are you like, oh my gosh, I see all the times people for cost of sale, they're not actually accounting for labor or adding in their time or whatever it may be. Or do you see, oh my gosh, all these small business owners are spending a lot of money on this type of software when they're not really using it or needing it at that point in time? Are there any like red flags that you see in either of those aspects?
So I typically find that product-based business owners are pretty good on the software front. I don't find that they're usually very wasteful, but just about every business, like once a year, once every 6 months, I always suggest like just do a software and fee audit, membership audit, and take a look at what's coming out of your bank account on a monthly basis and just say, am I making use of this? A lot of the times we do this with memberships where we're like, oh, I'm going to like get in on this. I want you to make use of it. So when you sign up for like, I'm going to learn how to do Etsy, you need to put the time in your calendar so that when you're looking at it at the end of the year, you're like, okay, I've got the time in my calendar. I'm making use of it. And I feel like this is a great investment. There's also what I would say is absolutely their time. I don't see business owners recording that and really understanding like what should my wage be based on my role. There's probably a couple other things that I see like people waste money on is like not making, and it all comes down to like whether they are making use of their money. So even in terms of like advertising and marketing, I see people outsourcing their success where they don't know what it's going to take. So before you invest in something, like before, for example, you run ads, like what does it take to be successful with that? Like, do you need to have polished social media before you do this? And like making sure you're aware of, you know, what the triggers are and then being conscious of it. Cause I see a lot of the time we invest and then we're like, oh, I don't know, it's not working out. And then we just get like sick of it 6 months later and we're like, that's it, we cut it off. Instead of, you know, 3 weeks in, is that getting the result we wanted? Is it having progress? If not, let's amend. Like, why is this not working? How come we're not getting the return on ad spend that we were hoping for? Let's switch up the ads. Usually we're just very passive with what we're doing in terms of marketing. And really, like, there's two things you need to know how to do in business: how to bring in the money and get the sales, and then how to use the money. And so that really, like, number one, the wages, making sure you're aware of all those costs, not being wasteful in terms of like the overhead, but then knowing where your marketing dollars are going and how they're bringing in the sales that they promised.
Beautiful. I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Stacey. It was so good to just pick your brain and have you share your expertise with us. Before we wrap up, I would love for you to just share where people can find you and how people can work with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Stacey, S-T-A-C-I dot Millard on Instagram. That is absolutely where I show up the most. The Small Business School podcast, which you are on. So I'm super excited. They can go check out our episode for more fun on product-based businesses. And they can work with me. I offer one-to-one fractional CFO work where I get to use all the things that we talked about today to help you create a plan for your business to increase your income and your impact.
Love it. I'll make sure to link those in the show notes so people can get a hold of you, find you, follow you. And yeah, I just want to say thank you again for being a guest on the Product Biz podcast. I really appreciate it.